You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. If you've watched any TV lately, you've probably seen ads for the World Cup. It starts in Russia on June 14th. Visitors and viewers from around the world will watch, and FIFA, the group that runs international soccer, is supposed to make sure the World Cup keeps up certain standards. That includes zero tolerance for discrimination based on sexual orientation. And that's come up a lot because of Russia's gay propaganda law, which many see as a ban on promoting or acknowledging LGBT rights and culture. To understand how FIFA, Russia, and yes, those big money World Cup sponsors interact to make the rules, we have Yuval Weber, a fellow at the Kennan Institute at the Wilson Center. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
I want to start with some basics. You know, when FIFA puts on a big event like the World Cup, who makes the rules? Are they abiding by country law? Is it their own sort of principality? What happens?
One of the interesting features about the FIFA World Cup as well as the Olympics is that these organizations have something really valuable, and they're able to get the host countries to suspend their own laws in order to get these events. So, for instance, Russia usually has a pretty strict migration law. You can't go there without a visa. But FIFA is able, and the Winter Olympics, when it was in Sochi a few years ago, was able to get Russia to suspend those laws for the people who were attending. So right now, if you want to go to the World Cup in Russia, ordinarily you would need a visa to go to the country. But if you have a ticket, that is your visa.
Wow.
FIFA and the World Cup can also get countries to suspend tax laws so that FIFA doesn't pay local taxes. They can get them to suspend aspects of labor law so that, you know, the stadiums get built. So one of the sort of interesting things about sort of FIFA and sovereignty and globalization is that this is a private organization that can actually dictate to sovereign countries what their laws will be for the duration of these events.
They could have presumably then suspended Russia's anti-gay propaganda law. They didn't do that.
What it seems from the public statements on the Russian side and on the FIFA side is that Russia sort of went with all guests will be treated well. So instead of saying, you know, gay tourists or gay sort of visitors to the event will be given special protection because of this anti-gay law, Russia went with the line that all people who come to Russia for this event will be protected equally. And Russia has said numerous times, because not just against, you know, gay and lesbian visitors, but also there's been a lot of problems with racism in Russian soccer. So people who have been on the receiving end of discrimination in Russia have been told they won't be protected because of those aspects of their identity or those aspects of their, you know, physical makeup, but they will be protected as foreign tourists. And it's the foreign tourists who will get protected regardless of anything else.
So if you're listening to this and you're planning to go to the games or you're thinking about it, what can visitors expect?
They can probably expect a policeman pretty much like every 50 feet. And Russia and their policymakers understand they don't have a very good reputation abroad. So one of the things that they do whenever visitors do come, whether it's like, you know, a conference for political scientists like myself, or whether it's like a big international event, they want to make sure that nothing goes wrong. So what visitors can expect is super peppy, friendly volunteers who speak English at all the airports, railway stations, all the, you know, the main tourist areas, and policemen everywhere, riot police everywhere, the army everywhere. What the Russian government has done is that they have contacted all the sort of hooligan leaders, you know, fan supporter group leaders in all the cities of Russia, have brought them in for meetings, have told them in no uncertain terms that you will not be bothering all these foreign guests who are coming. You will not be fighting. You will be not doing this, that, or the other. And that is in a way to make sure that all the headlines will be about the tournament.
We're talking to you in part because the World Cup is a multi-billion dollar event. When we think about corporate sponsors and how they position themselves here, can they use their money to influence what happens and sort of who is welcome at an event?
Yeah, it is one of the sort of the signal truths of our world that private companies have a lot of money and they can dictate quite a lot to sovereign governments. And what we've seen in terms of all the issues surrounding Russia is that more or less the corporate sponsors who are participating in this, they want to make sure that the Russia aspect of this is probably de-emphasized and that people focus in on the World Cup, they focus in on, you know, Leo Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, like all the big stars who are popular across the world, and de-emphasize the local host. This is probably in contrast to when the World Cup was held in South Africa, in which all the corporate sponsors, you know, went in hand over fist in order to associate themselves with this really positive story of South Africa overcoming apartheid in order to hold this like big international event. And so in that sense, we can see the, both the positive and negative aspects of globalization. FIFA can put on effectively the same event everywhere. Sometimes those stories that come with those events are positive, like when it was in South Africa. And also because FIFA is, by its design, one of the most deeply corrupt organizations on earth, sometimes those tournaments come with perhaps less positive stories, like in Russia, in which there was allegations of vote buying, plus Russia's, you know, general foreign policy struggles with the West. And then as well, the next one coming up in Qatar, in which the treatment of migrant workers has just been totally abysmal. So that's what FIFA is trying to do, is to make sure that when the story is positive, they emphasize that. When the story is negative, you'll see a lot of the, you know, the soccer stars.
So about corporate sponsors, you know, can they vote with their dollars? I mean, McDonald's has pushed back about Qatar. But what can corporate sponsors do here if they want to?
Well, corporate sponsors can choose not to to sponsor these events. And what we've seen is that, particularly with the Russia World Cup, there hasn't been a lot of, you know, the heavy duty sponsorship. There's been a few of the companies that are still there, like, let's say, McDonald's and Budweiser. But in general, the Western companies, particularly when it comes to, you know, the geopolitical risk associated with Russia and the reputational risk associated with FIFA itself, these are companies that are being replaced by local Russian, Chinese, and Middle Eastern companies. The big sponsors that have come in have been Gazprom, the Russian natural gas giant, Qatar Airways, which is the main sponsor of the forthcoming one, and a few Chinese companies. The countries that have a lot of money but seek to, you know, gain the global stage, seek to burnish their own soft power, that's essentially the people who are aligning themselves most closely with this particular World Cup.
Yuval Weber, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.